comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I'm delighted to be here. I'm delighted you're here, and I want to welcome everybody to talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. As you know, I was scheduled to be on the show with Jerry Wills on his show on the weekend, and I did it, and a lot of you watched it. I've been getting a lot of email from folks wanting to know, are we going to put the video up for that show? Well, the answer is yes and no. The first part of it, the first half of it, it was recorded in two sections, and the first half is corrupted. For whatever reason, it won't open. Now, I know the reason, and once I say this, I'm sure I'll have a whole bunch of people cancel their memberships and say, well, if you're just going to be that way, I'll just take my toys and go home. It's because he uses Mac computers. No, I don't know what caused it, but the first half is corrupted. It will not even open, and then the second half will open, and we'll put that up. It's being processed and converted, and we'll get it put up there so that you can watch it in the members area. All right, we had a good time, didn't we? I knew for sure that if I ever did a show where I talked about these other things, that there would be some people who would just be so broad-minded that they would say, well, if you know, I don't agree with that, and I'm not going to listen to this, and I'm going to take my membership and run. And so we did. We had about 10 that did that. And I knew for sure that would happen. Because unfortunately, within the UFO community, we do have some people who, though the UFO community says to everyone else, why are you so narrow-minded? You should be broad-minded, open-minded. You should examine the evidence. And yet, we do have some who, if they hear something that doesn't jive with their particular religiously held belief about UFOs or about something else, they take their toys and run. And so we did. We had about 10 that did. And I hate to see them go, but I hate to see them go primarily because it means they have a crippled brain. And, to say, I'm not going to listen to things if I disagree with them. How does democracy work if you don't listen? And I don't expect everybody to agree with me. But anyway, it was a good show, and it was a lot of fun. And I enjoyed all the calls we got. And let me say before I run out of time, because I am running out of time, if you haven't subscribed to the K-Files, our free weekly newsletter, be sure you do that. It is free at kevinsmithshow.com. We'll be back right after this. welcome back. Now, before we bring our guest on this evening, there is one other thing I forgot to mention in telling you about our show that I was the guest on Jerry Will's show Saturday, and I was at his studio, and you know, as you may guess, being bald-headed as I am, when I go out, I wear a hat. Out here in Phoenix, you really have to do that, or you have to have, you know, really sunburned head. Even now, we have a lot of sun. And Jerry gave me this hat band. This was handmade, and he said, in a village that's at about 16,000 feet up in the Andes. And so he gave me this hat band, and I'm delighted to have it. All right, now, our guest this evening is someone who's been with us before. It's always a delight to have him with us. His name is Sam Maranto, and he is the state director for MUFON in Illinois. And there have been some pretty strange things taking place in Illinois. Sam, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, thank you so much, and it's always a pleasure to be on.
Sam, before we get into what's happening in Illinois, in your area, I want to pose a question to you that was posed to me when I was on that show Saturday. This is a question that someone in the audience posed, and I thought it was just, I thought it really was an outstanding question. And the question is, do you ever get burned out on the UFO stuff because there seems never to be any real breakthroughs? So how do you answer that?
UFO burnout is a reality, and a good friend of mine, Dr. Rodiger, Mark Rodiger from CUFOS, he says, Sam, you have to watch yourself so you don't get burnt out, especially when it comes to doing events, etc., or working on so many cases. Right now I'm looking at, I think I'm somewhere around 30 plus cases that I'm working on. And I would say it's a matter of how to put it into the context of a good answer, for me at least, would be it depends on how you come into this as far as what your journey's what you're expecting as part of the journey. And to me, it's about the journey. It's not where we end up. It's more about the questions. And I think this is the scientific methodology or the way we should grasp it. You know, science is tentative, so we're constantly searching. Everything we approach is not so much an answer. It should open up a new set of questions. And if you have that spirit in you to constantly pursue, to inquire, to go down the rabbit hole, then it's fine. Yes, it can exhaust you when you're confronted by multiple things, such as, is this interdimensional? Are they time travelers? On and on and on and on. Is this our technology? And like Jim Marr says, yes, it's all of it. I think that's where some people may think that we're not getting ahead. But as far as a answer, I really never came into this looking for a answer. I always went into this to pursue a much bigger picture, a much larger reality than something that I may never get my mind around.
Well, and I think that's a good point, and that is we may never get our minds around it. If the answer were presented to us, it may be so big, so deep, so broad that we couldn't understand it anyway. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't look. You know, I don't get burned out, and I think there are breakthroughs. One of the biggest breakthroughs that has happened, two of them recently. When I say recently, I mean within the past 5 or 6 years. One is we've been able pretty well to just establish that the debate over whether UFOs are real or not, that debate is dead. That's a dead horse. And we've been pretty well able to establish that, which has brought about the second breakthrough, and that is that more and more, it's still a trickle, but more and more mainstream media are reporting on UFO sightings without giggles. And I think both of those are big breakthroughs.
Yep.
And especially that with the media.
Yes. I think validity and the fact that we're dealing with something that is genuine, where its point of origin is, really doesn't matter. The fact that we're not dealing with mass hallucinations, specific, you know, a matter of just variations of hoax or mundane or prosaic, you know, objects that are misinterpreted, you know, that's a given. Of course we have those, but the bulk of the serious research is dealing with things that are genuinely unusual and fit the description of unidentified. And that you hit it right on the head. The video camera, regardless what people say, you know, with computer generated images, people are not all trained in computer generated imagery, so that notion goes out the door too.
Well, it does, and look, you can pretty well tell when you look at a real video shot by a real amateur. You can tell the difference between that and CGI. I mean, just with a naked eye, most of the time, you can tell the difference. And it's all the things we have all complained about. You know, well, the camera was shaking, it's not in focus real good, it's, you know, that sort of thing. But you can tell the real ones from the CGI. And, you know, I think it has finally sunk in with mainstream media that cameras do not capture hallucinations. I think they finally got it, and at least some of them, and I give credit where credit's due, some of them are beginning to report without the giggles, and that's, I think, a tremendous breakthrough. But there's another breakthrough, and maybe it's just imagined on my part, but I don't think so, and that is the military has stopped trying to give cover stories for most of these things. They do once in a while, and the problem is that every time they come out with a cover story, they had some moron, well, I shouldn't say moron, they had some sophomore creative writer write their cover story, and it's easily shredded. And they get embarrassed in the press, like they did with Stephenville, and so they've kind of shied away from putting out cover stories, and I think that's another breakthrough.
That could be an added plus, that people in disinformation are just feeding such nonsense. They're knowingly just putting out such nonsense that the general public will say, that can't be. So maybe we're getting a softer position by some of these people, you know, just doing their job in intel and disinformation. So maybe that's changing. Who knows?
Well, let's talk about Illinois. What's happening in Illinois? Because when you and I talked, you said there were some pretty interesting and strange cases taking place. So kind of bring us up to date. What's going on in your part of the world?
In Illinois, well, the funny thing is, you know, I, as you know, I don't just handle cases in Illinois. I'm, you know, a research investigator. Then I get cases all over, sometimes even out of the country, and I'm actually working on two out of the country and in other areas. But I also like to cross-reference cases that are going on here. Now, to give you a span of time where we had some very interesting cases come in was the March 23rd to the 25th period. We had objects that I refer to as arachnids being seen in the Collinsville area by two gentlemen who are good friends, and seeing them independently of each other. One gentleman was driving with his 12-year-old son, and what had happened was the one who had seen the objects the most currently told the other gentleman that he had had a sighting. He says, before you go into detail about it, I want you to draw what you saw, and I'm going to draw, my son's going to draw what we saw. And the three of them got together, and I'll be doggone if it wasn't darn near the same thing, just different perspectives.
Now, when you say arachnids, that's spiders.
That's a term we use for these type of truly unusual crafts with appendages that can be, in fact, the description, many people describe them as crouching spiders with their legs bowed in. So we refer to them as arachnids. They have appendages, usually four or more. And the ones that they saw, be it one or the same or similar, the components were, an equal number of appendages, some very unique illuminations, and because this case is alive, and maybe there are other people listening that may have seen something, I don't want to give too much detail out, but they're always welcome to contact me. You know, that goes in investigating. You don't want to give all the minute detail out,
mm-hmm.
so people don't reduplicate it. They are unique. They're not the usual saucer or cigar shape or triangular type object. Again, unique characteristics to them also would be the illuminations.
Now, where did this happen?
In and about the Collinsville area, the observations was made by the one gentleman on two occasions, one on January 31st, and the other observation, I believe, was the 25th of March. And his first observation, actually both of them, was coming from St. Louis into Madison County. The first time he's seen it at a distance, but the unique configuration of lights. He has a military background, aviation background. He knew right off the bat the way these things were moving, the speed they were going. You know, this was definitely something that was not conventional. Well, on the 25th, he had the privilege of having this thing within, as he says, 50 yards, or quite possibly even at times less, over his car. His son was in the passenger seat, had a very good look at it, and so did he. He took a picture. We are going to be getting our hands on the pictures, and also in another case on the 23rd, that I believe is the same object in a different location, some footage of about 13 minutes of footage. So we have at least 2, 3, 4, 5 still pictures and footage that we're going to enhance for multiple locations, quite possibly the same event, same object, different events, and within the span of a few days, the 23rd to the 25th.
Are you are those photographs going to be made public? Are people going to be able to get their eyes on those somewhere?
Yes, I would. Once this is wrapped up, I usually like to drag things out because, again, this is a very unique type of craft, so it wouldn't be for at least 2 months or so that I would post these anywhere. But I will be posting them, and if I get permission to post, I'll give you permission to post them on your site also.
Okay.
That'll be pretty interesting.
So, now, have you looked into this much yet?
Yes.
All right. Now I know that what I'm asking is speculation.
Absolutely.
But a whole lot of what we do with UFOs is speculation. So let me ask you this: what do you think is what's up with the appendages? What's that about?
I've seen footage, and I have in my possession footage of what I believe this object may actually be once it is attached to a larger object. And it may serve a purpose, it may serve multiple purposes, if I'm correct. The appendages work much like the petals of a flower. They fold in and move out. There is an unusual beam of light that comes out from the center. And this object in particular was recorded as part of the Fredericks case that I was working on in 2004. I've heard of a similar object being seen out here in the, actually it was over Lake Michigan, in 2008 is when that object was seen in February 2008, with a myriad of other objects seen over Lake Michigan. And there were multiple witnesses to that also.
So, but what's the purpose of the appendages? Have you seen any video of the appendages being used for anything?
No.
Any ideas?
Sure. I'm not sure if it's just for landing, for picking things up. It seems as though they attach to, this object attaches to another object. There's a large appendage sticking out of the top, almost like a large, how would you describe it? If you were to take a triangle and just stretch it out very thin to a point, like a needle.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a docking mechanism, if I'm correct. I could be completely wrong. This could be a different type of craft altogether. It's just that I seen this one object perform these unusual, let's say the appendages moving back, you know, opening up and closing much like the petals of a flower. And
all right, we have to step away for a break, but we'll come back right there. I might want to get into these appendages a little bit more. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. My guest this evening, Sam Maranto. He is the state director for MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, in Illinois, and he is a researcher and investigator as well, which means that he handles the investigations of UFO cases, not just in Illinois, but all around. Sam, we were talking about these appendages, and you know, I had asked if you'd ever seen them doing anything, and you said, I think I understood that you've only seen them move, open and close, but you haven't seen them doing any actual functions.
What I saw was what I'm in the possession of is footage of what appears to be, well, it's obviously an object that was in the sky in Fredericks. This was in 2004. And or at that point, I think it was 2004, or it could have been 2005. This is Wisconsin. The object was being filmed as it were to sit, if you were to be sitting sideways, and it was opening and it was closing as if it were petals of a flower. Now, that appeared to be five components with a light, very bright light in the middle. Now, my speculation, again, my deduction, or what I'm thinking here, is quite possibly these smaller, this was a very large object, these smaller arachnids with four appendages, which are crouching. They seem to be crouching in, looking like fangs of a like a snake's fangs or a crouching spider. That's where we use the term arachnids on these objects. Are under a platform, which may very well be a circular or square or triangular, but unfortunately, they weren't able to discern that 100%. They're not 100% on that aspect. In other words, the base that these appendages protrude from. Now, they see no motion other than them being, you know, attached and going up. My opinion is, and this is purely speculation, that they serve purpose because the design of the way they were explaining it. I would think that they may fold in on each other, collapse in. It may be used for grabbing. It may be used for an assemblage of other, say, orbs or other types of smaller objects that may go inside and be transported or collected to another object. And when I'm looking at these drawings and I see this large appendage on top, there's protrusion in the center, that I can't help but feel is a docking mechanism or a device where it goes into or attaches to a larger object.
All right, now you said that there were sightings of similar objects several years ago. And then now in March, we had March the 23rd and March the 25th, two separate sightings. I remember back when people first began reporting that they were seeing these black triangles. And UFO investigators were sort of scratching their heads and saying, well, that's something a little bit new. We don't hear about those too often. And of course now, you know, we hear about them all the time. Is this sort of in that category? Is this something sort of new that, although it there have been some sightings over the past several years, but I mean, is this sort of a new and different vehicle that or object that is kind of scarce, kind of rare, or is this pretty frequent?
I would say, I mean, I can only speak from my own experience and research, that since 2000, I'm thinking of my own personal experience with these type of cases, and I believe it was 2000 was my first case, and that was in Rockford with one of these arachnid type crafts, and I only had to date, as in fact in my report, I've mentioned that I've only had three cases that I've worked with, two myself and one from research. Well, actually, it would be three in one from research, three cases that I've personally worked. So there's variations on these type of craft, but I think the design is fundamentally functional, and it obviously it's fundamentally functional, but it seems to be more of a specific type of craft, be it for purpose. In other words, if you were to take a bell curve or of like the most common type of vehicles or UFOs seen as far as shapes, this would fall at the periphery. I mean, it would be one of the odder ones.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I would say probably one of the most odd. But as strange as it is, every so often when there are when there are multiple sightings, when there are a higher frequency of sightings, these show up. So they serve purpose. The other thing is, some of the other descriptions that we get may just be misinterpretations of what they're seeing because they just can't put it together. Maybe, you know, they're not able to see all the appendages and get a different description altogether out of it, more like a cone possibly. Maybe it does turn into more like a cone if it were to fold in on itself. Or, you know, you follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. All right. But it's pretty interesting, though, that it seems that although these are rare, they seem to be sort of focused up in your part of the country.
You know, I'm trying to recall if we have, and this is what I was asking Dr. Rodiger about, because I would like to see if in the NICAP reports, if we have in the CUFOS reports, Blue Book, anything close to this. Now, I've seen some drawings that may be close to this. And again, I am really interested as far as from the research point is going back to old cases and doing a whole series of correlations or coincidence with cold case or old files that have drawings or photographs of these truly unusual type objects, not just a saucer or a, you know, a disc, that, you know, something truly unusual, and that's what I like. And you're going to see more from me on these correlations or coincidence with old cold case files and as far as from the research end.
Okay, now, one of the witnesses in this March 23 through 25th, you told us that he is he's got a, his background is that he's a pilot and
military aviation support.
Okay, military aviation support.
Yeah.
And he was within 50 yards of this thing looking at it. How did he describe it? I mean, I know generally he's going to say that it looks like a crouching spider or something like that, but I mean, what were some of the details he gave you about it?
They were just taken. First of all, the illuminations where they were positioned were exactly the same between all three witnesses. Each person had a unique perspective in addition to some general perspectives, perspective. What all of them, universally between the three witnesses, said that the appendages were the most shocking thing because it made no sense whatsoever. Each of them said they referred to them as looking like fangs, but when you look at it together, collectively, it looked like a spider crouching. The other thing is the fangs, or the appendage itself, seemed to be, and that one description was, if you were to take paper and roll it up to make a funnel, you could tell that there's an internal hollowness to the structure that's a little bit different, and the exterior more like a angle iron that it spreads out at the top, and yet it arcs between the two objects, or be the two appendages. So I stated to him, I says, well, can you give me in real life any other type of similarity? And he had a hard time, so I said, did you ever see the webbing between the tentacles of a octopus? And he goes, yes, like that, where it arches together and it forms together at the top. It doesn't, in other words, these aren't things just sticking out. They are formed. They're very neatly formed, very smoothly formed. The other thing is the self-illumination on the inside. You could tell that there are multiple illuminations of red, blue, and white, and possibly even other colorations on the inside. And they seem to vary with motion, you know, with whatever this thing's doing. And all three of them seen it move at god-awful speed. The one gentleman on the 25th had turned around to see it again while he was driving on the expressway, and he turned around within a 30-second period, and within that time it had jumped some 25 plus miles because he knew where it was over. And he says that's within the time that I turned around, but it may have not been the time that it actually took to get from one point to the other. He stated that because he reiterated afterwards, he goes, just to give you an idea how fast again, Sam, I seen it move from that point to another, which could very well have been a distance of 50 miles, and did that easily in under a second.
Well, now he said 30 seconds it moved 25 miles.
Is when he moved.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, he was within that period of time that he turned around, which he figures was 30 seconds,
mm-hmm.
it had moved 25 miles. In other
well,
words,
that would be 3,000 miles per hour.
Yes.
That's fast.
Yes. Now, that is an assumption that it moved once he did that, he says, but he's seen it leave from one area to the other, you know, within a second.
Mm-hmm.
50 miles in a second is
50 miles in a second.
Yeah. So that was...
Well, that's 30,000 miles per hour.
Yes. The other thing is it was pursued by military helicopters. And I'm not sure if they were out of Scots or whatever. But...
All right, we have to step away for a break. And we will be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. We're back, and we're talking with Sam Maranto. Sam is the MUFON state director for MUFON in Illinois. Sam, you told me that there were some other kind of weird sightings that had happened in your area. You want to share one or two of those with us?
Almost definitely. In and about the same period of time, the 23rd, in Lombard, Illinois, a description of a fleet of 40-plus objects, illuminations, and physical craft that were seen at relatively close range were flying about. And mind you, this is directly in the path of a flight pattern going into O'Hare. A gentleman at about 11 o'clock... was coming home.
11 o'clock at night?
11 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
He's seen these light blue lights fluttering about the sky, moving at incredible speeds, making formations. Some of those formations, by the way, looked like flowers, petals, flowers. Again, these were blue lights being seen down on these objects. Also, videotaped in southern Illinois in and around this same time at about 11:15, between 11:15 and 11:55, or 45, excuse me, a woman down in Lentzburg, south of where these other gentlemen seen this the arachnid, and much further south from the goings-on that is nearly simultaneous. Up in Lombard, a woman is seeing this extremely beautiful light in the sky, and it's doing unusual maneuvers, and she records it, and I will be getting that footage soon. I think these are similar or the same objects, and the Lombard case, we have 5 to 7 witnesses. I have interviewed 5 of them so far. There are 2 other ones that didn't live there at the same location, and I hope to be interviewing them soon. I think this little episode all coincides, and I'm going to be spending a lot more time on it.
I have a million questions here. What's the deal with O'Hare Airport? I mean, it seems like a magnet for UFOs now.
Well, another gentleman who on March, let me get the date of this. This was the, 16th. Not far from O'Hare. In fact, the gentleman works there. He's seen a V-shaped object with illuminations on it that were very dim. Not a plane, something that he has never seen before, fly directly over his house. And he was really startled by it because this is his second sighting. And it was the sighting that got him to finally file two reports. The other report was one from August 23rd, and he has footage and pictures, eight witnesses, of a triangular object, much like Tinley Park, emitting orange orbs. And these orbs sat over a park, and then they took off. And as he describes them, when they dimmed down, they shot straight up in the sky at such a speed that he couldn't believe it. But he was still able to see them shoot straight up into the sky. Now, again, this is all within, oh, gosh, less than 18 miles, 6 to 12 miles from O'Hare.
And yet we've only had the one report about O'Hare in the news. And, now I will say this is a little interesting because that one report was the most popular article that they've ever put on their website. And it had over 1 million hits in 24 hours.
Yes.
And you would think these folks in the newspaper business there would say, hey, look at the interest. Man, our readership would go way high if we started reporting on this stuff. And then our advertising dollars would go way high. But they don't do that. They've had the one report, and that's been it.
I have a funny feeling they've received quite a few more. I've had reports that other objects were seen at O'Hare.
Mm-hmm.
During the 2004 Tinley Park case, a gentleman reported to me that he had seen a plane that he felt was a matter of concern and safety because this object came so close to it. And he says, I know what I'm looking at. And he was a retired colonel and who worked in a program pertaining to disinformation on this this topic.
Mm-hmm.
And he stayed in touch with me for a while, but then basically fell off the face of the earth. We had, I've had probably about three or four other cases that came in, but unfortunately I never got to sit face to face with these people, and therefore, you know, their credence. I'd like to meet somebody first before it turns into something that I could say yes is a bona fide report.
Yeah, because anybody can send you an email or a letter or give you a telephone call and claim anything.
Yes, I like to get from them what I do now is an affidavit of truth. They lie to me. They try to make a fool out of me. I take them to court.
All right, now let's go back to O'Hare. You gave us some examples. Any speculation as to why there have been so many fairly recent sightings around O'Hare?
Boy, I'm not sure. All I could tell you is The air traffic has always been something that draws the planes. Same thing down in Mexico City. In fact, I find it very interesting that the sighting that day, Jaime Maussan came in at 6 o'clock, and he says, Sam, do you think they were here trying to greet me? Or I says, well, if they were here to greet you, they showed up late. You showed up late.
You're talking about the sighting over O'Hare that made it to the newspaper?
Yes, because it was at 4:10. He came in at 6 o'clock. But here he was that day. The other thing was that didn't really go into the report as far as the NARCAP report, National Aviation Reporting Center, you know, for aerial phenomena. Mm-hmm. And my investigation's part of that report, which was an interview. But I also, we were talking about some other objects that were painted in some of the radar footage and radar data. And they were, to the west of the airport, they seemed to be pretty much the same shape. There were, I believe, 15. And initially...
There were 15 of them?
15 objects. But what happens is when they look at, you know, NARCAP, they want to stay within a certain scope of the investigation. The sighting was over C-17, limit to a certain area, anything. You know, they want to keep a focus on a specific area. This is where something was seen. You know, are those other objects or those other paintings in the radar data, is that, you know, something else like, you know, ground clutter, etc.? I don't know. I really don't know. But there were some other anomalies there. There were also some other reports that I received from other individuals. Again, this is pure speculation because they call. They never sit down face-to-face. They never fill out a report. They never sign an affidavit. I don't get to see who they are, what they are. I can't take it any further. It's just...
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we'll be back after this. And then just a little bit, we'll open the telephone lines for you. Welcome back. And for those of you just now joining us in this second hour, my guest this evening is Sam Maranto. He is the state director for MUFON in the state of Illinois. And we're just talking about some of the wild and crazy things that are getting reported. And I say wild and crazy. They're really not. I mean, it's these sort of things seem to be happening all over the place. And it seems to be, to me, it seems that these sightings are increasing both in the number of them and the frequency of them. Sam, let me ask you to speculate. What do you make of that? I mean, is there any particular importance or meaning to the increased number of sightings and reportings?
To me, yes. I think there is, you know, again, is it correlation or coincidence? I would have to say there is a correlation to unusual Earth phenomena and UFO activity. And based on that, I believe last time we spoke, I had some projections, I don't like to call them predictions, but projections, as to possible seismic activity in some areas. Now, we're not talking about, you know, piezoelectric discharges. You know, we know what those are. We're talking actual craft being seen or unusual objects or illuminations that seem to be moving about by intelligent control. Now, are we going to be seeing something up here? We had an earthquake, you know, a few months back, And I think these large clusters of UFOs, these groupings, may be more in line with something different. I would like to know if recently there was a large amount of sightings in and about the Baja Peninsula or Southern California.
What do you think the connection is? Do you think these UFOs are causing the earthquakes?
I'm not sure if they're causing them or if possibly when that strained energy is there and being emitted, much like the piezoelectric discharge, is that disturbing a dimension or a enhancing of a, say, an ability to be seen? In other words, their cloaking mechanism, or even if it's dimensional differentiation that they're behind, you know, if they're behind one other dimension, that they're being seen at this point. I don't know. Or are they just aware of something? You know, and they're there saying, well, this is where it's going to happen, you know, and here it is today. We'll see it tomorrow and see what it looks like. I don't know. But there seems to be correlations with major earthquake events and real UFO activity. On that note, there has been observations now for months up in the New York Niagara Falls area, and that is a case I've been working on at a distance. I hope to be up there in a month or two, and there have been earthquakes up in that area. Now, if I were to project and make a deduction that, okay, then there should be a larger earthquake at some point in time if this is some sort of precursor or whatever you'd want to call it to an event. So is there correlations? I think there is. Down in South America, in Chile, and I was on top of that earthquake. I had sent out an email to Vic Connor pertaining to a concern of something happening in southern Chile, more so toward about a tsunami related to an earthquake. And there were UFO activities going on in and around and prior to that event. So I think we are at a point in time that we're going to see far more earth changes, and I don't know if they're just here to spectate, to warn, or to recharge. I have no idea. It's all speculation, but I think there is a correlation.
Fair enough. All right, folks. We're going to open up the telephone lines. The main number here in the studio is 623-444-5889. And in the United States or Canada, if you're on a calling plan where you can call without it costing you long distance, then call me on 623-444-5889. If it would cost you long distance to call us, then and you're in the USA or Canada, use the toll-free number 888-223-4599. If you're outside of the USA and Canada, I don't have a toll-free number that works out there, but I do have flash messages, and you can go to my website, scroll down, and you'll see the link that says flash message. Just click that, and you can send me a flash message. If you're in the USA or Canada and you send me a flash message, I will not see it. Okay? So, let's go to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
Yeah, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello, Kevin. Hello there, Sam.
How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing all right. You know, I've got to give two big, you know, if I had more hands, I'd give you more thumbs up for the work that MUFON has done over the years. And you know what they say? You got people that come out saying, well, we want disclosure, disclosure. You know, I think disclosure has been happening constantly. You know what they like? What these people like to do? They like to tell you the truth in little bits and pieces, and they like to put it in fiction so people, most of the masses, will tell you that it doesn't exist. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But sometimes we do get to some official reports that do come out. And this one coming out of the Vatican just recently, this is I just got this in my mail today. The apparently gray alien remains were found at the Vatican. Apparently, and the Pope for a long time has been told to subsequent, also previous popes have been told to remain silent. There's a photo that showed up on the website. I think I passed you that email, Kevin. It shows right a flat out a skull of what looks to be one of these grays. Yeah.
Well, you know, Lloyd Pye's been working on that Star Child for some time, mm-hmm. where it had a female human mother, but as far, you know, with the mitochondrial DNA, and the father was not human, and I guess he's going to have that wrapped up, hopefully, in a relatively short period of time. But here we have, you know, was it a picture or was it a story? Was there any credence to what you received, Rick?
Well, it's a full article here. It says, alien remains found at Vatican, Pope told to remain silent. Many alien skulls were found during a restoration project at the Vatican Library. Rendition of the appearance of the excavated skull when alive. And it goes into a whole news article about it. And it shows the photo right there. Yeah, it's I trust the source that this came from, and
well,
it doesn't look to
be
any. Pardon?
It wouldn't be uncommon for them to keep it secret. I've heard of many times at a dig or years back, you know, if they stumbled across giant bones or skulls, they would dig them up, put them together, and just burn them.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Kevin. Thank you for the call. Wow, that's going to be a big story if it pans out, you know, if it checks out. I have not had a chance to see that email. I checked the email about half an hour before the show. So if I got it, then it came to me after that. And I'll check again after the show. 623-444-5889, toll free 888-223-4599, and you know, maybe you're sitting out there all around the world, there you are in your house or in your office, your workplace, and you're listening to the show, and you have seen a UFO. You've never told anybody about it because you didn't want somebody to think you were nuts. Well, that's beginning to fade away worldwide, but it has always been faded here. Because we don't think you're nuts if you saw a UFO. Some of the great pilots of the world have seen them. Astronauts have seen them. Scientists have seen them. Presidents have seen them. So you're in good company. That, you know, if you've never told anybody, this would be a good time to share with us what you saw. All right, from Columbia, we have a flash message from Peter. And he says to you, Sam, does MUFON receive any Men in Black reports? And if so, can you share any interesting ones with us?
Well, I can only speak from my own experience. And in the Fredericks case, there were individuals, if they were Men in Black, I'm not sure. I would have to say they were from a agency. And one day I received a call from Robin, who was the woman, there was a man and woman and a daughter, and she was screaming and crying, and here I go, what's going on? They live in a house that is built on an incline, so access to underneath the home was, you know, you could get it from the side of the house. Somebody went underneath there with one of these flexible periscopes. It was poking around, and this was during the time that we were investigating the ongoing, truly unusual events up there, everything from abductions to cryptid creatures and craft of all sort. And it wasn't just them, it was people throughout the whole community. This was 2004, where we had all these different events going on. Every time he would go into town, he was followed by blacked-out vehicles, mainly, you know, basically trucks and SUVs. And every time he tried to confront them or take pictures, they would back out and go away. And this was ongoing. For myself, it would just be a matter of people influencing or, you know, the group, getting involved, obviously for only one purpose, to cause problems. But beyond that, I've had things stolen from me, evidence stolen, attempts for to break into my home, etc. But beyond that, no threats or anything else.
All right. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Tony from North Carolina, Kevin.
Hello, Tony.
Yeah, listen, I love Stan Maranto, man. He tells it all like it ought to be. And, you know, I'm a member of MUFON. But in 2004, I had a thing happen to me. I had some dogs in the backyard, and I had gone out to feed them, and it was about 8:30 at night. It was March. Can't remember the exact date, but it was in March. But I had gone to feed the dogs, and I had walked out, and I had this one dog, and she kept looking up in the air. And I just sort of turned around and looked. And about 300 feet above us was a triangle-shaped craft with four lights. It had three lights in the configuration and one big orange light in the middle. And this dog was just mesmerized by this thing, whatever it was. It made no sound, and it just, like, floated across from us. And it was like it was only going maybe 20, 25 miles an hour at the most. And then all of a sudden it just took a right turn and it sped up and left. And it was, you know, this was very unique for me because I had never seen anything like that before.
Wow.
Tony, you were close to it. You saw it pretty up close. Do you think that was human-made, or do you think that was extraterrestrial?
Well, you know, I spent probably 12 years in the military, and I was stationed near Air Force bases, and to my knowledge, I've never seen anything that looked like that before. I mean, it was just something totally different from anything I had ever seen.
And you say it was... I'm sorry, go ahead.
What year was that?
2004.
Okay.
2004.
Do you remember the month by any chance?
Say what?
Do you remember the month by any chance?
It was March.
March.
March of 2004.
Well, here we are, 2004, the year of the weird. So many things happened that year. It was very incredible.
And, you know, that's just stuck in my mind. But, you know, I mean, that's not the only thing I've seen. You know, I've seen other things that I couldn't explain. And like I say, I was in the military for 12 years. And, you know, I know the difference between an airplane, a jet, and things that are supposed to do what they're supposed to do. But, you know, I'm just saying it was something totally different.
When this thing took off, you said it made a right turn and then took off.
Yes.
was it, did it take off like really fast, or did it just sort of begin to accelerate?
No, it just accelerated a little bit faster, and it just took a right turn and headed off. And I live in North Carolina, and there's a air base that near Goldsboro that has F-15s, and it took off toward that way, and it was not really fast. It was just a progressively speeding up type of thing, and it never really accelerated real fast.
Would it shake you up to find out that the pilot was extraterrestrial? I mean, if you found that out, would that shake you up?
Well, not really. Not really. Because I could believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard of other reports like that in your area?
Well, no, but I did go back, and I have seen reports of the same type of thing. And 2002, that was similar to what I saw.
Well, I think you've seen something truly remarkable. Of course, you have the animal, your dog, responding to something, and this is something that happens time after time. And I can think of, off the top of my head, probably about six cases where people are alarmed of what's going on out there by the dogs, by their actions. And they don't care. They just know it's unusual. If it was a regular plane, they probably wouldn't have given that much of a hoot, you know, as far as that goes. But they respond. And you just had to have been shocked, you know, when
before.
You see this. Yeah.
And, When the dog saw it, it was just like she was a statue.
Yeah.
And she just kept staring at the object.
Now, the central light that you've seen in there, you described it as being orange. Were you able to get any better detail as far as was it a solid orange? Or how could you describe that central, if you focused on that and think of the detail on that?
It was more of a solid orange, is what it was. It never had a glow to it, only just a solid-looking orange to it, as far as I could tell.
Now, how is it you were able to discern the craft from the sky? How would you describe that?
Well, the best way I can describe it was it seemed to be triangular because it had three lights, one at the front, two at the back, and the central orange light in the middle. That was the best way I could describe what it would be.
Now, was it? How would you describe the contrast of the object itself to the sky? Was it darker, lighter, a different color?
It was actually darker. If I thought about it, it was actually darker.
And this seems to be the case with most of the large triangles, that it's darker than the sky itself, which I find interesting. Now, the lights on the corner, were the lights actually underneath in the corner, or were they protruding or affixed to the actual points themselves?
But it actually looked like they were underneath, but, you know, it was hard to tell. Because at the time when it happened, you just see it, and you just really, a lot of times you can't comprehend, you know, exactly what you're seeing. But it looked like it was probably under the, I would say, the wingtip or whatever it is.
Now, what color were those?
They were like a real bright white.
Similar in the sense that it seemed to not scintillate, or was it diffused? How would you describe it? Was it confined, the color?
Well, it was just like a bright white light. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, I won't say it was really bright, but it was like a medium bright. It was pretty bright, but I think the most thing that stood out was the orange light in the middle, really.
Great. I want to thank you for your report and also for being a member, and keep up the good work and keep your eyes to the sky.
And thank you, Tony, for the call. 623-444-5889 is the main number here in the studio. The toll-free number, 888-223-4599. Sam, what is the significance of this orange light in the middle? Now, let me tell you, I saw a video, and you've probably seen it. It's on YouTube, of one of these big triangles, and it's hovering and slowly rotating, very slowly rotating. It's got the three lights, and then it's got an orange light in the middle. And then all of a sudden, there's a big flash of light, and that light in the middle becomes like a big ball of light above and below the craft. Have you seen that?
Yes. I've never seen, you know, the strange thing about it, I've seen discs, I've seen orange orbs, I've seen other phenomena, other types of UFOs. I have never seen, and I swear, I have never seen the triangular UFOs, any ones.
Yeah.
The small ones, the 300-footers, 1,000-footers, or, you know, mile-long. I have never seen any variation, anything like that.
All right. We are just about to step into a break. Caller, are you willing to hang on through the break? Hello, caller. Okay. We'll be back right after this, and the phone lines will be open when we come back. Right, we are back, and we're talking with our guest, Sam Maranto, the state director for MUFON in Illinois. And the telephone lines are open. 623-444-5889 is the main number. 888-223-4599 is the toll-free number in the USA and Canada. Outside of the USA and Canada, I don't have a toll-free number, but what I do have is a flash message option. Go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down, you'll see the link that says flash message, and you must be outside of the USA or outside of Canada. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is James from Texas. Hello, Mr. Smith.
Hello, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Maranto.
Hello, how are you?
I have a question for Mr. Maranto. I'd like to ask him about cattle mutilations. Do you have many files in MUFON about cattle mutilations?
Yes, we do have files in MUFON pertaining to cattle mutilations. That isn't my area of expertise. We have a new investigator on board who has spent a decent amount of time covering this in the Missouri area. Again, he is a investigative researcher who freelances in different areas and been doing this for some time, by the name of Gary Hart. There is a lot of such stories, sightings, reports, even police reports in southern Illinois, Missouri, and also, of course, the Indiana area. Also get reports from Wisconsin now and then. So these events take place.
Have you ever had a case where a farmer told you they had been compensated for the loss of an animal by people identifying themselves as local officials?
No, but I've heard rumor of something like this. So in other words, what you're telling me is if that happened in your area, I think you may also find that that wouldn't have been an isolated incident. I would look into this a little bit further if that actually had happened, because that's very interesting.
I had that experience back in 1972 in Ohio.
Oh, in Ohio?
Yes.
Okay, and you're somebody approaching you as or representing themselves as being a local law enforcement official, or
it wasn't me.
Official?
It was a farmer that I would go on his land. I was running. I was trying to survey some Dena and Hopewell mounds because the area was going to be underwater. It was the Caesar Creek Reservoir area, and this
okay.
was before it became a lake.
Oh, yeah. This is very interesting. In fact, if you can, I would really like to hear more about it. If you could email me, in fact, I'd like to give my email at this time. Is that all right, Kevin?
Sure.
MUFON, M-U-F-O-N, Sam, MUFON Sam, at Comcast.net, Comcast.net. MUFON Sam, all one word, at Comcast.net. And please, don't be afraid to email. I do send emails back. And if you have a case to look at, this information, of course, I will keep confident, so don't be afraid about that either. If you feel like giving me a call, my office number is 708-460-7606. That's 708-460-7606. And you could call from anywhere around the world. I will take your call.
All right, Mr. Murato. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, James. 623-444-5889 or 888-223-4599. Let me check real quick over on our flash message board and see if we have a flash message. We do, from Kevin in Australia. Mr. Maranto, did you see any blue glow below the craft or melting substance falling off the orange craft? Well, it was an orange light, Kevin. It was not an orange craft. But what about that? Did you see any? Have you seen any of this blue glow or any melting substance falling from UFOs?
I personally have seen what appeared to be from an orange orb a oozing or a detachment. That's what I was, you know, I was really shocked when I seen it, both Julie and I, our first orange orb. It seemed to be oozing something off the bottom or something of similar intensity being so close can give that illusion. Now, if we are talking about the arachnids, yes, the lights at the bottom are on the bottom and they're blue. Now, if we're talking about orbs, there are black orbs that I've had cases with, one in particular in the Lombard area, strangely enough. Lombard, and this was a black orb with a neon blue ring around it and a gold corona on the bottom. And this was a gentleman from Australia?
Yes.
And I believe you can give me a call. Try calling me again, 708-460-7606. I believe we tried to talk once before, and I had missed his call.
Okay. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Tracy from Canada.
Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Sam.
Well, hi. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing great. Wonderful show tonight. I live relatively close to Niagara Falls, and our skies have been very busy. especially since February. I was wondering, Sam, do you find that solar activity has anything to do with UFO sightings? Like, do people normally see more activity up in the skies?
A very good question. Solar activity, more so the coronal mass ejection, solar winds, are something I make it a point to pay attention to. And in fact, the last couple of days were very, very busy. So if we had more UFO activity, I wouldn't be surprised, because we had some coronal mass ejections that were very powerful in the last couple of days. And they have been hitting the Earth.
I've I've noticed the same thing around here, and especially when there's going to be a big earthquake, seems to happen more. And
yes, that's true.
I live relatively close to an airfield, so it's not odd for me to see things in the sky. Mm-hmm. So I was looking out the window maybe an hour ago, and I saw three lights, which is normal for any plane taking off, except one went directly up, one went west, and one went east. And me and my two cats were staring at this thing going, "No, what would you think that was?"
Yeah.
I counted, and it was out of my sight in 3 seconds, all three lights. So I don't know what that was, but it was definitely odd.
How far from the falls are you?
Tonight I'm about 2 hours.
2 hours away. Are you aware of the activity that's been down there?
Yes, huge. Especially when there's going to be a big quake.
Yeah. I think there's a correlation there. And another thing to please pay attention to, and I did give my phone number out and keep it, and also my email. Make sure you have that. If you see any other further activity, please send me an email. I will also send back to you our people up there that are working very diligently on the sightings. And you may see some of the names up there on YouTube, Shiver Canada and a few of these other folks that have done some great research. And all I could say is we have a phenomena that's going on right there locally and at a great location for people to observe. And what it all means, I don't know, but I feel that we are eventually going to see a rather large earthquake in and about that region. And again, this is pure speculation, but it's based upon some ongoing research on my part, and that being independent of MUFON, so I will not tie any names to that. So just keep your eyes to the sky and be aware of these things and keep me informed.
I will for sure. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Tracy.
Thank you.
All right, 623-444-5889. Toll free, 888-223-4599. Now, there was a second question in Kevin's flash message to me, and I think it's a great question. At any time, was anyone dizzy while seeing this craft or any other craft that you're aware of?
Physical effects, yes, on some cases, depending how close they are. Some people are just overwhelmed. This latest group up in Lombard, they were reporting that their eyes were, you know, when they looked at the constellations started to move. Now, I don't know if they were just focusing on these other objects too long that they were, you know, having this happen to them, which is just normal. But I know of people that have had physical effects when these objects are close. The people who were in the car, the only effects they had with the arachnid crafts, these being the current cases, one gentleman was trying to call the other gentleman, strangely enough, and the phone didn't work. The cell phone did not work. And they've made calls from that very vicinity back and forth to each other along that stretch of road and never had that problem before.
All right. To the telephone, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Steve in Fort Worth. How are you tonight?
Good. How are you, Steve?
Doing well. I wanted to ask Sam a question.
Okay. Could I get you to speak directly into your phone? We can barely hear you.
Yes. I was going to ask Sam, about 4 months ago here in the Fort Worth area, a friend of mine who lives up in the Azle area had a strange thing happen. His dog started going, you know, barking like crazy out the window, and it was the middle of the night. It's probably about 11 o'clock at night. So,
okay, Steve, a break is just about to take over. Are you willing to hang on and tell us about this when we come back from the break?
Yes.
Okay, you hang in there. We'll get you first up when we come back from the break.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we shall return. You return with us, okay? Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are on Final Approach, and we have Steve from Fort Worth with us. And Steve, just start over, because I wasn't watching the clock, and I let you get started, and then you only got about two sentences out, and we had to break in.
Okay, a good friend of mine who lives up in near Azle, Texas, he lives in a real country area. He lives on a couple acres. And all of his neighbors tell me they have big, you know, acreage estates and just, you know, farmland, basically. Well, anyway, one night, around 11 o'clock, his dog went to the window and started barking and just started going berserk. So he went to the window, looked out, didn't see anything. And so he went outside in his backyard, and then there's an oak tree. It was probably about maybe 100 feet from his back door. And he looked down on the ground, and on the ground there was a real shiny object. He described it as being as bright as an arc strike from a welding arc. And he went over there, it got his attention, so he walked towards it. And as he got near it, he has a big metal barn that he looked up, and it was an orb in the sky. So he kind of went out into his pasture, and he looked at it, and it just kind of went west, southwest, and then it just it kind of stayed there for a while, and then it just started taking off towards the west, southwest at an increasing speed until it just disappeared. So he went back, and by that time the object had stopped glowing, so he picked it up. It was not hot, cold. He just picked it up, and it was basically like a rock. So he brought it to, he took it inside, and all of his, he has a pasture, and he has some animals, donkeys, and things like that. Well, all of his animals were spooked real bad, very uncharacteristic of the animals. Anyway, he brought it back to, our lab, and we had it, we x-rayed it, we put a Geiger counter to it, they showed normal background radiation. The x-ray didn't reveal anything, all the strata looked, you know, pretty typical. We put a black light to it, and it, when you put the black light to it, it kind of fluoresced a real bright orange color, and So we kind of determined, we did some research on the internet, kind of determined that it was a piece of petrified wood that has a characteristic to emit certain colors of, you know, when it's exposed to certain wavelengths of radiation. And so anyway, we called the Texas MUFON director here, Mr. Fletcher, I believe is his name.
We can barely hear you, Steve.
Yeah, we had called the Texas director of the MUFON here. I think his name was Fletcher, and he wanted to come and get the sample, and he wanted to slice it and do some analysis on it. And my friend at that time didn't agree to do that. And but I think that now he does want to do it. And then another strange thing that happened in that occurrence was the next day he had two men in black that came across his front yard on the street, which is about maybe 75 yards from his front door, and they walked about all the way across his front yard, and one guy just kept looking back at him, and the other one just kept walking straight. Classic Men in Black. And the cops, somebody had called the cops because some of the neighbors had seen these guys too, and the cops came to look for them. They couldn't even find them. And then, so anyway, there was quite a few different events, but I mean, my question is there that kind of thought? I thought that they might be mining. They're looking like for minerals or something, because it's like they looked at this, and also there's no petrified wood in this area at all, none. This was in his yard that he's mowed for 20 years. He said he's never seen that stone there in 20 years. They don't know where it came from. There's no petrified wood in the area. And I was just curious if whoever it was looking for minerals and just happened to analyze this piece and didn't like it and dropped it in his yard. Has there ever been any occurrence like that?
There's been occurrences of things being, holes dug, especially in Poland. Now, there's a phenomena going on where these unusual holes are being found, which may indicate, of course, some sort of sampling. Now, this object, can you give me, now you've seen it, you've held it, obviously, correct? Or is that correct?
Excuse me?
Have you seen this object and held it yourself?
Yeah, it's sitting in my office. I sit with my friend. He has a cubicle next to me, and it's sitting on top of his computer in his office.
Okay.
We have it.
Do you find it in ratio to its size? Is it relatively light?
No. No, it's. I would compare it to, it's about maybe 6 inches long, 4 inches wide, maybe 3 inches long. It's like a triangular. Rectangular shape.
Okay. Boy, I would love a piece of that for a evaluation.
It's the only case. That I know of that I've. I told my friends, hey man, you got trace evidence that's very rare.
Rare. And what you should do is put it into a safety deposit box,
mm-hmm.
and please shoot me an email. And would love to get a couple samplings from it. He really needs to have some samplings taken and analyzed. Is this
okay.
by any chance looking like slagging? Like, do you know what slagging looks like from...
Yes. No, it's not
okay.
slagging. It's definitely
okay.
stone. I mean, if you look at it, it looks just like a piece of petrified wood. I mean, it has all the characteristics of petrified wood. Like I said, it's a research on the internet. The color, the red color that it glows at when it's put under ultraviolet light is typical of a certain petrified wood that's out there. So, I mean, we made a long list of questions that we would want to submit to the MUFON to have answered. I mean, these were his questions. This was kind of like a contingency. Okay, I'll give MUFON a sample of my evidence if they agree to answer these questions, it's his property, not mine. I'm just telling you the story. But I do know that he is willing to give us...
Here's what I find interesting. It was glowing, correct, when he walked out there?
Mm-hmm.
There's the possibility of the object was already there and that this object interacted with it because of the natural phosphorescing of it being possibly
fossil.
Just simply, a fossil. So that's a possibility too. But that did catch his eye, strangely enough. When he looked at this orb, what was the color of the orb again?
It was white.
White orb.
Right.
And it was at night or was it during the day?
It was at night. It was about 11 o'clock at night. It was low. He said it was about 100 feet off the ground.
And he felt it was pretty close to this object?
Oh, yeah. When he went out, when his dog stopped barking, I mean, he kept barking, so he went outside to look, and he went outside to go look at the, because the rock got his attention, but when he looked up, he saw the orb, and it was about 100 feet near, and he watched it just go off to the southwest slowly, and then it just took off out of sight.
Guys, we're going to have to wrap it up here. You've got less than a minute left, and then we're going to have to deal with the end of the show.
Okay, make sure to send me an email at mufonsam@comcast.net pertaining to this,
okay.
please. mufonsam@comcast.net. And thank you very much, Kevin, for the show.
And Steve, thank you for the call. Very interesting, huh? All right, Sam, I want to thank you for giving us of your time to be with us this evening and talk with us about all this, because it is very, very interesting. You got some very compelling things happening in your part of the world.
Well, I love it, and love to share it as much as possible. And I think we have interesting... We live in interesting times, and I think we're going to be seeing a lot more interesting things.
All right, if you will, just stay on the line with me for a moment, and I'd like to talk with you for a moment after we close the show. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to be a wrap for this evening. Tomorrow, I'm going to be speaking with a journalist and UFO investigator from Croatia. He is in Croatia. And so you want to be sure and be here for that. You don't want to miss it. He may have some additional information on Dr. Filipov. I don't know, but I do know that he was involved in helping get the information out that we did get out. And so we're going to have the opportunity to talk with him. All right. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.